The Mike Lupica Podcast.
We are back now with the great Mike Lupica. He's one of the country's
most prominent sports columnists. Mike Lupica has covered just about every sport.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends.
I was talking to Jordan about Woods after the basketball game the other night. Everybody in sports to be the next this guy, the next this guy. And Michael said, no, he's the first Tiger.
In your face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A $1 billion industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Hello and thanks for joining us on the Mike Lupica Podcast. Today, I am happy to say we will be joined again by one of the best information men out there, and a terrific writer too. He works for ESPN. He is the author of a wonderful new book called The Man I Never Met. It's the great Adam Schefter. But before we get started with Adam, I gotta tell you about Gillette. Every morning I use my Gillette razor. I know when I'm getting a great shave. It's been a consistent part of my daily routine and my dad's for such a long time. My dad used a Gillette, so there was never anything else in our family. My Pro Glide and Fusion Cream give me the close, comfortable shave I'm looking for. Gillette offers a variety of shaving products for every guy. The new Gillette 3 and Gillette 5 razors start at $7.99 and deliver even more options for every guy by offering trusted quality at an affordable price. The Gillette 3 and the Gillette 5 are both available in stores. For guys looking to get Gillette Performance delivered to their door, you can find Gillette 5 at GilletteOnDemand.com. Check it out today. That's GilletteOnDemand.com. Thanks for joining us again today on the Mike Lupica Podcast. And our guest today is a friend of mine who has been on before, and we usually try to get him on at least once before the start of the football season and then during the football season, so then I can hold his feet to the fire about predictions that he made. I first met Adam Schefter, not knowing any of his history of being a Long Island kid or any of that, when he was writing in Denver. We became aware of his work and we put him on the sports reporters, and he hit it out of the park from the start. Now you see him all over ESPN during the football season. He does basketball now. But before we start today, Adam has a story to tell. Adam, who is such a fine writer, has written a book called The Man I Never Met, about and that tells the story of his family and the life of his family before he met his wife. Again, The Man I Never Met, it's coming out on September 4th, 1 week before the anniversary of September 11th. I know that's a long introduction, but it is worthy of you. Hey, Adam.
Mike, thank you for that kind introduction, kind words. And yes, it's an honor to be with you. You know how I feel about you. You know how I've always felt about you. My mom met you before I got the pleasure of meeting you. And I appreciate those kind words right there.
Adam, let's get right to it, because I am going to read the book over the weekend. Let me read what Dan Wetzel, whose work Adam and I both respect and like a lot, said just today. Got this today, meaning Adam's book. Finished it today. Couldn't put it down. That's probably the best compliment I can give Adam Schefter's introspective and inspiring family story. Adam, for people who didn't see the piece you did about Joe, your husband's, your wife's previous husband on ESPN, which was magnificent, tell the backstory and then things that have happened since.
Well, Mike, what happened was, basically, I married a 9/11 widow, and she's an intensely private person and really likes to stay in the background and just kind of keep to herself. And I would say 7-8 years ago, roughly, she asked me, why do you never talk about the fact that you're married to a 9/11 widow? And I said, I've always tried to just respect your privacy. And she said, well, I wouldn't mind if you mentioned it in honor of Joe's memory. And so what I did was I pitched a story. I didn't know what the story would be to ESPN on the 10th anniversary of 9/11. And they said no, and no problem. And then before the 15th anniversary of 9/11, which happened to be on the opening Sunday of the 2016 season, I pitched it to ESPN a few months in advance, and they said no again. But somewhere along the way, a great producer at ESPN named Greg Jewell called me up and he said, I want to do that story on Joe Mayo for the first Sunday of the season. And I said, really? And he said, yeah. I said, okay, great. And we sat down and I really didn't know what form the story would take other than it would be a tribute to Joe's life and his memory and a salute to my wife for the courage she demonstrated after his loss. And we sat down, and the piece ran that day. And I could say that I've been in the business now for 28 years, and I've never done a single thing that has ever generated the reaction that that one piece.
Oh, my God, Adam. I remember watching it, and I know you, and you're my friend. And over time, you had told me little bits and pieces of this story. Yep. It blew everybody away.
Well, thank you, Mike. And so what happened was there were some people that said, hey, we should turn that into a book. I was not one because I really didn't know what form the book would take.
Right.
It was much like the TV story. And there were some people that we spoke to, and they wanted to make it into a book. And we said, okay. And I just figured, okay, this should be another way to honor his memory and another way to salute my wife and another way, honestly, to give our son, Devin, a way to remember his biological father.
Who was 15 months old when Joe died.
Correct. And so we began writing the book, and I wrote it with a great writer from Sports Illustrated, Michael Rosenberg, who Michael went to Michigan like myself. He worked for the Michigan Daily, the student newspaper like myself. And I followed his work for a while, and we both really didn't know what it would be. But we had a lot of pieces of a puzzle. And we put the puzzle together over the course of about a year and got it written up. And over the last, I would say, 3, 4, or 5 months, we've given out the book to a handful of people. And every time we've given it to somebody, they have had a reaction that Dan Wetzel has had. And my wife has said, being the glass half empty person that she is, well, what do you expect, Adam? They're your friends, or you know them professionally. Of course they're going to say they like it. And I said, yes, Jerry, but the thing is that everybody who's read it has said that they read it in one sitting. Like, if you read it and didn't like it, you wouldn't sit there and read a 200-page book in one sitting. It just wouldn't happen. And the reactions keep coming much along the lines of what Dan wrote today, and I appreciate Dan's kind words. And I've given it to just random people, people that I'm close to, people I'm not as close to. And again, if Joe's life is honored and remembered, and my wife is saluted, like I said, in the way that hopefully she'll be, then, and my son is given another way to remember the man that he didn't know, then it's a win. And so we'll see how the public at large views the book, but I feel encouraged so far by everybody who has read it.
We're talking to my pal, my very talented pal, Adam Schefter, on the Gillette Hotline today on the Mike Lupica podcast. And Adam, for all of us, I don't care who you are or where you were. September 11, 2001 was a seminal moment in people's lives and in the life of this country. That goes without saying. I was getting lunch for my wife and I today at a deli in our town, and a man came up to me and said, "You don't remember me, but we met at another diner on September 12th, 2001."
Wow. Wow.
And spent a lot of time talking to that. And it was such, everything that happened in the next week to me was such a blur. I was in the city every day. I was writing a column every day. I was at Union Square. I was down at Ground Zero, but it so profoundly moved people. So I want to go back to you and Sherry.
Mm-hmm.
How long did it take, when you and Sherry started dating, when did you find out that Joe Mayo, her husband, had died on that day?
Well, you know, Mikey, when you read this book, I think there's going to be a lot of things in there that surprise you, a lot. And really, it's three separate stories. And I kept telling Michael, the more of Joe and the less of me, the better. And we had a little tug of war there. He's like, no, I want more of you in this book. And I'm like, no, please. But it's a story of Joe's life, but it's also a story of Sherry's life. And my life is intertwined in there. And I was going through a tough time when I moved from Denver to New York personally, just because at that point in time, I'm 39 years old. I'm still not married.
You were with the NFL Network then, right?
Yeah, I was at the NFL Network, and you had begun to invite me out to Sports Reporters. I would say the first time would have been roughly, I'm not far off in this, Mike, I would say 2004.
Yeah, I think that's probably right, Adam.
You know, because you'll laugh at this. You probably won't even remember this, but the day that I got an offer to leave the Denver Post to go to work for the NFL Network, you showed up that day and either your suit was stolen or you lost it and you had to go across the street to Macy's and buy a suit on the spot or a Sport Check and Select. Do you remember that?
It was when we were doing the Thursday night sports. There was a time, folks, when we did two a week and we did one on Thursday night and I was coming in from Eastern Long Island. Oh my God. I haven't even thought about this until, and I got out of the car and I said, oh my God, you really are completely losing it. You left the house without a jacket and I ran over to Macy's. You're absolutely right. Bought one, ran back and we did the show.
Well, Mike, again, here's a little thing that you wouldn't know about me and that really nobody would know about, but I have kept a journal of my life every single day since 1990. And so I handed that journal over to Michael Rosenberg as a guiding light for my life at that time. And so when I remember that you lost your jacket that Thursday night, that's in my journal.
Yeah.
Like that's in my journal. So I was going through a tough personal time at that time, and I was alone and single and, you know, wondered if my life would be like that. And I got a call, I was constantly going on dates, blind dates, and someone called me and I said, well, you know, we've got a woman that we want you to meet and she's great. And the only thing you should be aware of is that she lost her husband on 9/11 and she's got a 6-year-old son. And I was, and you know, had I heard that 6 years before or 16, I would have been like, yeah, on to the next one.
Right.
At that point in my life, I said, okay, if you're telling me that she's as special as she is, I want to go meet her. And from the moment I met her, I was blown away by her. And that's basically what happened.
By then, Devin is 6 months old, and all of us who know...
6 years old when we met. 6 years old when
six
we met.
Years.
He was 15 months old when Joe lost his life.
You know, they, Sherry and Adam now have, they have a family of their own in addition to Devin. I'm interested in this again, because as a New Yorker, you know, it's very interesting because Pete Hamill had the best line I've ever heard about that day. And he had come out of a breakfast down there. He got separated from his wife for many hours that day. I didn't know where he was. And he's not only a dear friend of mine, but a mentor and one of my heroes. He's always said,
with all due respect to you, Mike, you know how much I loved you growing up, and my father always loved Pete Hamill, and I always read all of Pete Hamill's books growing up. Like, my father got me all of them, so I've always been a huge Pete Hamill fan myself.
And so Pete's line is this, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said it in different forms and written it in different forms ever since. And he was magnificent in the shadow of 9/11. Mm-hmm. And he said, September 11th told you nothing about New York City or New Yorkers. He said it was September 12th and 13th and 14th and 15th. And the image he always had, Adam, and we've talked about this before, was of a fighter getting first to one knee and then slowly gathering himself and then slowly getting up, the way the whole city got up. And I was wondering, as you and Sherry began your relationship and your life together, how much of a shadow did that event cast? And was there a part of you that said, whoa, this may be more than I can handle?
Oh, Mike, it never changes. It's there every day. You know, Sherry said in the video piece that ran, and if anybody hasn't seen that, I would invite him to see it. Just Google it online and they could see it. I guess you Google Adam Schefter 9/11 tribute. In the piece, Sherry says that day it stole a part of her and it never will be replaced.
Right.
And, you know, it forever changed her in so many ways, physically, mentally, emotionally. I mean, how about the fact that 1 year after 9/11, she was diagnosed as a type 1 diabetic? Now, again, I don't know that you could ever prove it, but that, I believe, is a direct result of 9/11. And the stress that came along with raising a boy on your own when you've just lost your husband. And so, you know, that's a, that's a rough disease, and she lives with that every day. And she lives with the emotional and mental scars of that day every day. And, you know, it's hard to describe. It's just it impacts your life all the time. And for many people, you know, that's just, as you mentioned, a seminal day, the most unforgettable day of my life. I was not yet born when Kennedy was assassinated. I guess that would be right there. The Space Shuttle Challenger, Columbine. We could think of various days.
Yeah, sure.
But to me, there was no bigger day that affected our world and the way we live today than that day. And it especially impacts, obviously, all the people that lost loved ones that day. Like, we talk about Shari, and Shari tried to go on with her life and was fortunate to get remarried and have another child and go on as best as she could. But I think of people like Joe's parents, the Mayos, you know, who never get back their son. And no matter what you do, nothing changes that. And it's not just the Mayos, but it's everybody on that day. And one of the things we said in the TV story that we say again in the book is, you know, everyone has a story from that day. This is ours. And that's basically it. Because you could talk to all the people from that day who lost somebody, and every one of them would have a heartbreaking story to tell. Every single one of them. And ours is unique in its own ways, just as there would be 3,000 other unique stories, maybe 10,000 or 20,000 or 30,000 because of the other lives that it touches. And, you know, it's funny because I'm sitting with my daughter right now, our daughter Dylan, and she knew that Joe was killed, but she had no idea how. And the first time that she ever realized or heard the expression 9/11 was when we did that piece, and the Friday night before it ran that Sunday, so it would have been September 9th, 2014, or 16, we sat down to show her the piece, and she couldn't understand what had happened. Like, she was completely confounded that people would fly planes into a building.
Right.
And at the time, she's 7 years old.
Right.
And she was adamant that they had to be drunk or something like that. And so, and we explained to her that there are a lot of bad people that did a lot of very bad things that day, but that there were some good things that came out of the day. And if that day hadn't happened, you wouldn't be here. And she said to me very wisely, well, why couldn't Mom have just had me with Joe?
And you, oh yeah, that's an easy one. I'm sure you fielded that one, no problem, Adam.
Oh yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's just, and in a way, it just goes to show you, like, there are things that come up in relation to that day and that experience and that life that you never would imagine, that being one.
We're talking with Adam Schefter on the Mike Lupica podcast. More with Adam after a word from Geico. There's a quick way you could save money. Just switch to Geico. All it takes is 15 minutes to find out if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. And Geico offers coverage for more than just car insurance. Got a motorcycle? Geico's got you covered. Got an RV? Covered. Got a boat? Covered. How about a homeowner's or renter's insurance? You bet Geico's got you covered. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save. That's geico.com. Adam, we're talking with my pal Adam Schefter, who's one of the hardest working and most talented people I know. And if the Sports Reporters TV show had even an infinitesimal way of boosting his career, we will always be proud of that. What was the writing of this book like for you? Did you find it more sad than uplifting? I'm throwing you a bunch of questions here. What was the most difficult part for you?
How about everything? Yeah. I know that's a broad answer. You know, my wife didn't read the book until last weekend, Mike.
Oh, so you didn't see? I'm a big shower when I'm writing, even when I'm writing a novel.
No. So am I. But my wife really had no interest in kind of reliving it. going back there. That it's kind of the way that she's tried to operate her life. Like, I don't need to be reminded of it. I lived it. I know it. It was the darkest, worst period of my life. Why do I want to read about that?
Right.
And so I never was going to pressure her and say, well, you have to read it. You know, it's going to be a book. And you know, because, again, she was the one that initially...
She wanted you to do the TV piece.
Yeah. Well, she was fully supportive of it. And it's, you know, she read it a couple of weeks ago, and you know, it was tough for her. You know, at the end, it was very emotional for her. It brought her back to a lot of tough places. But honestly, I just wanted her to be good with that and at peace with that. And I think it touched her and moved her as well. And there were some very difficult parts in that. So, you know, when you say what was the most difficult part, I could say everything, because putting the whole thing together, thinking of how to do it, thinking how to be tasteful, respectful for the Mayos, everything like that, and make it all work. It just, the whole thing was a big challenge, Mike, to be honest with you.
Oh, no, it's going to be a huge bestseller. We're talking to Adam Schefter. The book is called The Man I Never Met. It is the story of his relationship with his wife, Sherry, her son with Devin, with Joe Mayo, who died on September 11th. The family, they have started together. It comes out on September 4th. And, you know, and one of the things, you know, everybody is referencing, but I'd be pretty happy with it. If I were you, is Tom Rinaldi's book about my guy from BC and the red bandana story. And these sorts of stories, as well as television does them, you know, I've written a million books in my life. I still believe that there is something magical. I tell kids this all the time when I travel around the country and talk about books, Adam. There's still nothing better than page one, chapter one of a book you really want to read. And having done it now, are you glad that you did it?
You know, Mike, again, I'm not as prolific a book writer as you are, but I've done a few in my career. I've been fortunate enough, and they are challenging and their own projects in and of themselves. And I always say I don't necessarily enjoy writing books, but I enjoy having written books. This one was different, though. And this one was personal, and this one, again, was designed to honor lives and to be very delicate and tasteful for the Mayo family, for my wife, for Devin. So again, all that really mattered to me was that they liked it. And I held my breath when the Mayos read it, and I held my breath when my wife read it.
Right.
And the Mayos told me that they loved it, and Sherry was clearly moved by it. And so as long as they were happy, I'm happy. Like, everybody else could say, bores me, not interested, don't want to read. That's fine. Again, from that standpoint, I'm good with it.
Talking to my buddy Adam Schefter on the Gillette Hotline. So, just to review, you went to ESPN once. They said, no, we don't think so. You waited, what, 5 years? You went back to them again. They said, no, we don't think so. And now this story, told well, is going to be a best-selling book. And it's just odd sometimes how the dominoes start to fall and you end up in a place that, Adam, that you never, ever, ever, ever anticipated being in.
Yeah, I mean, this is different territory for me. And this is something that was a unique experience. And you know, when the piece ran, like you said, Mike, a lot of people had no idea.
No, listen, how long did we know each other before I knew this story?
Yeah, yeah, and you're not alone. I'm going to tell you, Mike, the TV version was one thing, and it was a small sampling. And I mean this when I say it. You'll understand what I mean when you read it. It doesn't even touch on the rest of this book.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
it was a small, a 6 minute TV piece is very different than a 200 page book. And I think that in this particular case, that is, you'll see the difference, Mike, when you read it.
Well, I can't wait to read it. And I you know, if I hadn't thrown you so many head fakes this week and not been moving from one house to another, I would have it already. Again, The Man I Never Met, we will get back to it in a minute. Would you mind, Mr. Football, Mr. Show Business, talking a little NFL football now?
You reached out to me to bring you on your podcast. You had no idea that we would spend 15, 20 minutes talking about what we just did you?
No, as soon as you sent me the Wetzel thing, and then I went and read up on the book, and then I know it. I'm going to do the same thing Dan read. I did. I'm going to read it in one day. So anyway, let's because I'm it'll make me crazy if I don't get to talk a little football with you. Okay.
Yeah, no, let's do it.
Okay. Here, let me. I'm going to run something by you, and I have no. We have not discussed this, so I want to know what you think. I want to talk about Saquon Barkley and Sam Darnold, okay? And here is my own, if we were sitting on the Sports Reporters, here is what I would say about this to you, okay?
Yep.
Saquon Barkley has a chance as a running back to be a transformative player.
Agree, but, and I would agree with that.
But, it's a big but though. It's a big but.
I know your but. I could answer your but without us even having discussed this. Could I add on the but and then you'll tell me if I'm right?
Yes.
You want to let's play this game, okay?
Okay.
But if Sam Darnold is what the Jets thought, if Sam Darnold is what the Jets think he is, then the Giants messed up because you don't ever bypass a franchise quarterback who could play for 15 years in favor of a transcendent running back that may last 6, 7, 8 years.
Okay, you got my butt. You saw my butt. You raised it with your own butt, and it was the same butt. And okay, so now we got to get off the butt conversation. Let me add one more thing to this conversation. As great as Barkley may turn out to be, Adam, other than Terrell Davis, you tell me the last time a running back was the difference maker on a team that won the big game in the NFL.
I would tell you that Emmitt Smith was that kind of transcendent talent.
Yeah, but he was playing with Troy and Michael. Come on. Yeah,
correct. On a team loaded with defensive speed, I can make the argument that Marshall Faulk was a transcendent talent on an offense that featured other Hall of Famers and Kurt Warner and Isaac Bruce. Maybe one day he'll be there. And Torrey Holtz was tremendous. So, I mean, there were a lot of great players. But rarely has a team ridden a running back to a Super Bowl. It just doesn't happen. Not in this day and age. And here's the part that interests me there, Mike, because I have this conversation almost every day now because, as you know, the people in New York are enamored with the Saquon Barkley pick. And I don't have an issue with that. Like, Saquon Barkley, we all think, is going to be an unbelievable football player. So it's nothing with him, but it's the idea of a quarterback. And there are people, you know, within the Jets organization who just think that Sam Darnold is a rock star, that he gets better every day. And look, the real lights may come on September 9th, and Sam Darnold may not make it, and maybe he wilts, and maybe he's not what they think. But if they're right, if he's what they think, then the Giants made a mistake, no matter how good Saquon Barkley is.
Adam, we are in the same lane on this, and I have great – here's why I respect Dave Gettleman, because my man Ernie Accorsi respects Dave Gettleman. So he has a right to say that he wasn't blown away by any of the quarterbacks. But, Adam, I don't know what you think. I think this is going to turn out to be a great quarterback draft. And a kid I keep talking about, Bob and Mitch and I were talking about on the Sports Reporters podcast the other day. I love Lamar Jackson. I think Lamar Jackson may turn out to be a football star in the NFL.
Look, all these guys have a chance, Mike. And the truth of the matter is probably three or four of them will make it and one or two of them will flame out.
Yeah.
And we don't know how that's going to turn out just yet. But these guys, you know, Baker Mayfield, if you watch that first preseason game, he looked like, man, he looked like the real deal. Now, I was talking to a coach yesterday. He said to me, hey, wait till Baker Mayfield goes up against a first-team NFL defense, you know, with speed and they're not laying back the scheme and they're coming after him.
Adam, even when the Giants have their first team defense on there, it doesn't look like a first team defense.
Yeah, well, that's a good point too, Mike. I would just say this, that Baker Mayfield looks like he's got a chance to be a stud. Josh Allen's got that kind of potential and arm to be a stud. Josh Rosen, they love in Arizona. Lamar Jackson, like all these guys. So it's August. Everybody gets excited about their guy. So I think when we have that Darnold Barkley conversation, we have to preface it with that statement. And by the way, that's also assuming that Saquon Barkley turns out to be what the Giants think he is, which we don't know that he will. We think he will, but we don't know that.
And Adam, the other part of that bet is if you make that pick and you know the object of the game is to get one more Lombardi trophy for Eli Manning, you're making the bet that at the age of 37 or 38 or 39, he's still going to have enough game left to get him back to the big game. And I'm not sure that, and I love Eli and I love Archie. I love the whole family. I'm not sure that's true.
It's a great family. I'll say this to you, Mike. I don't know that there's a team in the NFL that has a running back, tight end, wide receiver trio that is better than the Giants. I mean, go ahead and name me a team.
No, you're 100% right. You're 100%
okay,
right.
So Eli's performance should be elevated by the extreme talent.
Steelers aren't bad, though. Steelers aren't bad in that.
Well, listen, hold on. Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, and who? Evan Ingram is a freak.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, if you watched him this summer, if you talk to people who have watched him and coached him, I remember last year someone in the Giants organization telling me that this is what they said. They said he's the Odell Beckham of tight ends. He can be that kind of player. Now, again, doesn't mean he does become that. Doesn't mean he is that. And he certainly flashed at times in his rookie year. But that guy's got all kinds of ability. So when you bring up the Steelers and Brown and Bell, yeah, I'd rather have Brown and Bell than Barkley and Beckham. I'm good with that. But now you're taking Vance McDonald and Jesse James over Evan Ingram? I don't think so.
No.
So the trio then tilts in favor of the Giants, maybe. I said trio. I didn't say duo.
We're talking to Adam Schefter. All right. I got so many questions. Well, let's stay in that. Not only the conference, but in the division. Adam, do you think the Philadelphia Eagles would have won the Super Bowl if Carson Wentz and not Nick Foles had played the big game?
Yeah, I do. You know, if we go back to the beginning of the postseason, Nick Foles, you know, struggled. And the Falcons had a defensive lapse right before the end of the half that allowed the Eagles to kick a field goal, then they failed to convert in the end zone at the end of the game, and if any of those things happen, the Falcons advance, the Eagles are done, and the Eagles story isn't what it is. You know, Carson Wentz was playing at an MVP level.
Oh, I know.
MVP, like if he had 33 touchdown passes when he went out of the lineup in December with the torn ACL and LCL. So, I think he was operating at a different level. I think they would have won the Super Bowl with him, yeah.
All right, and here's the thing about the Eagles, and I've been saying this for months, okay? The best team in football, and with all respect to the Patriots, the best team in football, both sides of the ball, up and down the roster, was the Eagles. And once Wentz got hurt, it was still hiding in plain sight. And we sold them short all the way till they forced that turnover. And so I hope Wentz is healthy because I loved watching him play football. Let me throw a couple other quarterbacks because I think he was another guy who was on his way to being an MVP candidate was Deshaun Watson. Is he healthy again?
Yeah, I mean, he's taking all the reps. They love the way he looks. He's torn both ACLs right now. And, you know, we were talking about teams bypassing players, bypassing quarterbacks for players. How about the Cleveland Browns who one year trade away the picks or the pick that becomes Carson Wentz and then another year we have them trade away the pick that becomes Deshaun Watson. Back-to-back years, Wentz and Watson trade away those picks. And for the Wentz pick, they basically came away from that with Jabril Peppers, and David Njoku, and Denzel Ward from this year's draft. And then Watson, they did a bunch of players as well. So, I mean, that, you know, that's why it's so, if you bypass a quarterback, it's very difficult to recover from that sometimes. Now, the Browns then went and used that number one pick on Baker Mayfield, who I think will always, to a certain extent, be measured against Wentz and Watson, especially if he doesn't succeed. And that's not his fault or anyone's fault, but it's just the way it goes.
It's the irony of what happened with the Giants. What had we been saying from the time the Giants season totally cratered out? oh my God, it's happened to them again. They're bad the way they were before Ernie got Eli. And all this time later, they're going to bring in the guy who's going to be the next Eli. And when they had the number two pick in the draft, they ended up taking a running back. And I don't, again, you're right. If you don't like the pick, it sounds like you're saying something bad about the kid. Everybody likes this kid. Everybody likes Saquon Barkley, but this idea that you could just get a quarterback anytime you want one, well, take a look at the rest of the league. See how many elite quarterbacks you think there really are in this league, and tell me that the Giants can be sure that when Eli is 39 or 40, the merry-go-round is going to come around again, and they can get an Allen, a Rosen, a Darnold, a Jackson, or a Mayfield.
Hey, Mike, let me give you one other side note to that, okay? When you draft a running back at number two, he automatically becomes the highest paid running back in the game.
Right.
The highest. So your running back is making more than most of your players, most all of your players. When you take a quarterback at number two, his salary is such that $7, $8 million a year becomes backup quarterback money.
Right. Right.
So you give yourself a chance for 4 years, maybe five, to pick up that fifth-year option, to have a quarterback at a going rate that's way less than Matt Ryan at $30 million, or Jimmy Garoppolo at $27.5 million, or Aaron Rodgers at $32, $33 million, whenever he gets his deal done. You got a quarterback at $6, $7, $8 million. So there is no greater prize in all of sports, I don't believe, than hitting on a rookie quarterback. Now, if you whiff, your franchise is set back.
5 years. Adam, 5 years and sometimes more than 5 years.
But if you hit early, like the Seahawks did with Russell Wilson, and you get to save all that money and spread it around to other players, you hit early, like the Colts did with Andrew Luck. Now, he got hurt, but they can spread money around, and we can go on and on with any of these other quarterbacks, because it used to be that quarterbacks didn't excel that quickly in the NFL. It took them 3, 4, 5 years before they could develop. But now, if Sam Darnold turns out to be what the Jets thought, and he's playing to that level in 2, 3 years, you've got an extraordinary discount for a couple of years, 2, 3 years, to go try to win a Super Bowl. So you go pay Leonard Williams and wide receivers and running backs and cornerbacks all the money they want, because you don't have to pay the quarterback, and you just save $20, $25 million a year.
Adam, I told you one time, if there was one thing, and again, it's all a crapshoot. I don't fancy myself as an NFL personnel guy, but I said going into last year's draft, I said, I will die on this hill with Deshaun Watson. You can't play the way he played against Nick Saban's defense twice and have anybody tell me that he's not going to be the real deal when he takes it to the next level. I feel the same way about Sam Darnold, even though he hasn't come close to ever playing a college football game as big as the two that Watson played against Alabama.
Well, again, Dabo Swinney himself said that this is going to be the Michael Jordan of the NFL. Now, I'm not that's a crazy statement. That's a crazy statement. And you know, who knows if he'll ever achieve that kind of level. But the fact of the matter is that that tells you what they think, and that's now he's got a chance to go do that.
All right, I've already kept my buddy Adam Schefter longer than I said. I lied to him about how long I keep him today. A couple more questions, okay?
Yeah,
and I got one. Adam, in your life, loving and covering pro football, and in the future of your life, loving and covering pro football, will we ever see a play that changes the course of pro football history for two franchises, but particularly one, more than Malcolm Butler's interception on the goal line in Glendale against the New England Patriots? You consider what we thought the Seahawks were in the process of becoming, what they never have become and might never be again, and it completely changed because 4-4 is different than 5-3, if that's your Super Bowl record. It completely elevated Patriots' Super Bowl resume from what people would have thought as being mediocre.
I mean, Mike, I think there's definitely some truth to that, but, you know, I would just go back to the David Tyree catch and the play, a few plays before that, we've talked about, where Asante Samuel, who led the league in interceptions that year, dropped.
All goes through his hands.
That would have sealed that game, would have sealed the victory, would have sealed the unbeaten season, would have sealed the argument, perhaps, as the Patriots being the greatest team of all time. And Asante Samuel dropped the pick, and Eli escaped the pressure, and David Tyree caught the pass, and Flexico caught the touchdown, and there we had the Giants' victory. I would argue that any one of those plays is significant as Butler's pick, but the Butler pick was huge, and you know, I think that that was the start of things turning around in Seattle because it was so difficult for that organization to overcome it, and it helped continue to prop up the Patriot franchise to what it was, to where it won the Super Bowl against the Falcons. And so it gives them another title. If you make that a loss instead of a win for the Patriots, you know, people are talking about them in a little bit of a different tone.
Right.
So, I mean, that's the beauty of these plays. I don't know that I could elevate one over the other. They all have tremendous significance and meaning to them.
Okay, I'll just shoot you a few fast ones. Patriots, are they good enough to go back to the big game and win it this year?
As long as Bill's the coach and Tom's the quarterback, they're in that conference, they're always going to be a force. Now, do I think Jacksonville is dangerous? Yep. Do I think Pittsburgh's dangerous? Yep. Do I think Baltimore is a team that could be improved, and the Jets are on the come, and the Chargers will be formidable, and the Chiefs at, yeah, I mean, all these things are true, and we just don't know how every football season is going to go, and there's always surprises. But I mean, you'd be crazy if you didn't look at the Patriots as the favorite, even without Brandon Cooks and Danny Amendola and Julian Edelman suspended for 4 games, and it doesn't matter who they keep losing. The key people are still in place, and they're right there at the end every single time, and they may not make it to Atlanta this year, to Super Bowl 53, I think we're on. But you know that barring something strange, they're going to be square in that conversation.
What about the Rams? I love the coach.
He's unbelievable. He's fantastic.
I love the coach. Are they the next thing?
Listen, the next thing is something that lasts a long time in the NFL. And most things in the NFL don't last a long time. So that's the first thing that they're trying to defy. And they have some things that they're trying to address and get figured out, i.e. Aaron Donald right now,
right,
for the long-term success of that franchise. But I will say this, that Sean McVay is an incredible young coach. And by the way, Kyle Shanahan is right there with him. And that division has got, to me, the two best young head coaches in the game, the two sharpest young offensive minds in the game. They both have quarterbacks and would seem to have quarterbacks for a long period of time, with Garoppolo being young and Jared Goff being young. And I would think that those two guys will be battling out year after year after year, the way that great divisional coaches would. I'm trying to think of a divisional coaching rivalry that lasted for a long time that you would say – I mean, Chuck Nolan, John Madden, right? I weren't the same division, same conference. That may be what this is, the 2018 version of Chuck Nolan and John Madden going at it out in the NFC West twice a year.
Last question from my buddy, Adam Schefter. And again, I urge you in a few weeks to buy The Man I Never Met by Adam Schefter. It's a 9/11 story. It's a love story. It's a history book. And it's a wonderful way to, once again, nobody ever celebrates the September 11th anniversary. Nobody thinks of it that way. But The Man I Never Met. All right, last question about football. What team could be the biggest surprise or make the biggest leap and jump to the front of the stage this year in National Football League? I always have to ask you one like this.
Yeah, I know. And you always have me sighing on one question. Who's going to win the NFC? Who's going to win the NFC? I think if we're going to look at a surprise team this year, I don't think the Chargers would qualify, right? Would the Cowboys qualify, Mike?
Yes, because I am starting to think their moment may have come and gone. Yes. They would surprise me if they played really well this year.
Okay, well, I'll give you the Dallas Cowboys because I think that they'll be better than people think. I think the defense is going to be better than people think. I think the offense will have a chance to do better than people think, even though it hasn't looked that way in camp. So I would say the Dallas Cowboys will be better than people realize. I think the Baltimore Ravens will be a little bit better than people realize.
Do you agree with me about Jackson? I love Jackson. I think Jackson's going to be terrific.
Love Jacksonville. Love. Hey, look. The Jets bypassed Doug Marrone. You can say whatever you want about Doug Marrone walking down. The guy's a great football coach. Tom Coughlin is a great football man. That he got great football leadership with great football talent. They picked at the bottom for a long time, and they turned it into something. And, I mean, I don't consider the Jaguars a surprise because that would have been the first team that I would have said. I'm picking them to go to the Super Bowl. I'll pick Jacksonville versus New Orleans right now. And we'll see how that works out, which probably ensures it'll be a New England-San Francisco Super Bowl.
You got me. That you just surprised. See, now, maybe the biggest surprise was Adam Schefter making the pick that you just made.
Jacksonville, New Orleans?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are my picks.
Adam, I thank you for doing this today. It is always great to catch up with you. I've told you this before. Not enough good things can happen in your life and in your career. I cannot wait to read this book this weekend. Pal, thanks for doing this today.
Mike, thank you. I appreciate all your kind words. I appreciate your friendship and your support, your guidance. And the only thing I ask you is two favors. Number one, send me your address so I can get you that book. And number two, after you read it, please let me know what you honestly think of it.
As soon as I close it, I will call you. Folks, I tell you all the time, this was not the conversation. When I called Adam this morning, this was not the conversation that I thought we were going to have. I found out about the book today. I've been badgering him ever since to make sure he has a copy of it to me by tomorrow. These are the people I talk to. I only talk to people I want to talk to on this podcast. So continue to subscribe. Our numbers continue to grow. Continue to download. Leave comments. And we'll talk to you next week, everybody.
The Mike Lupica Podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica Podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica Podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.